She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And today we are going to give you some really incredibly wonderful movement-making things and a person to talk about, think about. And of course, I'd like to thank our sponsors. Our show is made possible today due in part to the generous support of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Habitat's goal is to build safe, decent, affordable, quality houses for people in need, and what a great job they're doing at that. And for our thousands of listeners from around the country, please visit the Habitat.org website to find out ways that you can get involved with Habitat for Humanity in your community. So let's get on with the show. The name of our show today is How Green is Your Monday? And joining me for this hour is David Young. He is the thought leader, movement maker, and I say those words very, very carefully. I really use thought leader very judiciously, movement maker, and he is the co-founder of Green Monday. As a social startup group, Green Monday aims to tackle climate change and global food insecurity by making low-carbon and sustainable living simple, viral, and actionable. Very important, intentional words there. Simple,
Hi,
viral,
how,
and actionable.
How are you?
David, I'm so glad you're here. I cannot believe it. We have to do a little shout-out to Deb Nelson, because when I talk to her about guests and all of that, she goes, oh, Gina, this guy just left my office, and he's unbelievable. He's turning the world upside down, and I am not kidding. So we were on it, and I just want to say, your company, it's like the things that entrepreneurs dream of, like becoming Fast Company is one of China's top 50 most innovative companies in 2014, and the launching of Green Commons. So I have lots of questions, and I'm going to assume that you have lots of really great answers. This is not your first rodeo in terms of interviews.
Well, first of all, really, thank you for the kind introduction. And I had a great time meeting with Deb Nelson, of course, and inspired by many social entrepreneurs and leaders who are trying to make positive changes in the world. And I'm just glad and very lucky to be one of them.
I know. And David, I'm not kidding. She was really excited. She goes, oh my God, he's contagious. I think that's the word she used. Like, you can't be with him and not get the fever. So it was very exciting for me when Kelly made the connection and made this all happen. So it's always good. I like to, jump ahead. What is it? But I would like you to start with what happened in your life that prepared you for this very important and really it's going viral journey in the founding of Green Monday. What about your background in your life said this is the next big thing for us?
Well, I think there are a few things that kind of is the background for the last 10 or even 15 years that kind of led to the point of me and my fellow co-founder starting Green Monday. So in no particular order, the first one, of course, is I started becoming a vegetarian about 15 years ago. So that was year 2000, 2001.
Right.
And that was more from a compassion for animal standpoint.
Okay.
Just I thought there's no need for us to eat animals, but at the same time, we can still have a very, actually, sometimes even healthier life if you know how to eat balanced diets. So that was my personal change. But then soon after I made that change and naturally, I start to study a lot more about, how to eat healthy and the correlation between food and the world. And to my big surprise, I mean, that was, I think, 10 years ago when the United Nations published a report that tells us, number one, we have a global serious problem, which is called global warming.
Right.
And we all know that global warming come from carbon footprints. But to big surprise of myself and still to many people is When we think about carbon footprints, the number one culprits we always think is either about, you know, fossil oil, is about transportation or manufacturing. Those are the things we think of when we, you know, picture carbon. But the UN tell us actually that's not the case. The number one reason is the livestock industry, that animals, particularly cows and lambs, they emit various type of greenhouse gas, and actually their impact is worse than transportation, which is second. So that was a huge shocker to me. So I was like, so that means I was a vegetarian, have been a while. So you're telling me actually I'm already doing something that is low carbon and helping the planet. And when I started, I didn't even know it. So that was a couple major background. And the other part is I myself is a serial entrepreneur. I've started multiple business in different fields, and I'm just the kind of person that when I see something, I will take action, and when I see an opportunity, I want to address it and then seize the opportunity and do it. So about 3.5 years ago, these all three things start to come to the same point, and I say, well, the problem of climate change has gotten way worse since 10 years ago, and is there a way that we can start a movement and potentially a social venture that can use food as the anchor point? On one hand is to educate people about the correlation between food and sustainability, and then on the other hand is, can we create a social conscious business out of it? So that's how we started.
And that's a perfect segue, because the social conscious business, I mean, there's a myriad of parts to this, but you struck a chord with large corporations. You have partnerships with them. You have won numerous awards. Talk about the business consciousness. Did they start to recognize that what has been missing? I mean, I feel they continue to see there's a social responsibility piece. It is more about people, planet, profit. So talk about what you mean when you say social responsibility on the part of corporations. Let's start with that.
Sure. Well, when we started, even though right now we opened Green Common, which we'll talk about that later, but at the beginning, we start by striking one partnership after another, one collaboration after another with huge corporations, the biggest fast food chains in Hong Kong, global multinationals based in Asia as a starting point. And the way we approached them was that, hey, you know, green and sustainability is a complicated subject, and there is no absolute perfect answer.
Right.
I mean, we cannot ask people or companies to make a change from 0 to 100 overnight.
In 15 minutes,
Yeah, I mean, that would be too scary and intimidating for people. But we say, can we focus on a baby step? If everyone take the first step together, then actually that's not a baby step anymore. That becomes a collective shift in our society. So the idea is, hey, you know, we are only talking about first as an entry point is, can we promote one day of plant-based diet per week within a company, within a restaurant? And we don't even ask them to remove meat on the menu. We just say shift the ratio. So, for example, if a school cafeteria, if a company cafeteria or a restaurant chain, let's say the ratio between meat and green is 80-20, let's say 80% meat.
Okay.
And then we say on Monday, can you simply shift that to maybe 50-50? Okay. If you can do a little bit further, then 2/3 green, 1/3 meat. But we insist not to take away meat. We say, but then surrounding this whole change of menu, we would add a lot of promotional materials, collaterals to educate people. So when they look at a menu, it's not just to say, oh, here is a vegan dish or a vegetarian dish. But there will be a message to say that, hey, this is a Green Monday menu. And by going green, you as part of the society and part of the company can help, you know, climate change, slow down climate change, and also various environmental problems. So when we approach companies, we say, hey, I mean, you are a responsible company, right? I mean, you want to do something for the society. We have a very low barrier and virtually no cost thing that you can do, but you can make a huge impact. So whenever we say that, say, oh, you know, we don't have to pay anything, it's a simple shift that we need to do, but we can, you know, gain that kind of recognition for helping the society and the planet, then companies start to listen. So we start to, we approach company, and usually we even approach them from the top, meaning like director level or even
right,
CEO
the decision
level.
Decision makers, yes.
Decision makers, and say, hey, you know, this will help your company in both ways. One, definitely will increase, will help with the brand image that you are becoming a, if you are, then you become further of a socially responsible company. And then on the other hand, we also tell them that this is actually a trend that is happening in the world anyway, that people are eating more healthily, people are eating more consciously, and people demand more transparency in their food and in their overall consumption. So this is a shift that young consumers and general society is going anyway. So if you are the first mover by showing that you will do that for the society and for the consumers, you will attract, you know, kind of new age type of consumers. So from a brand standpoint and from the real top line and bottom line standpoint, it will help your business. So before long, we start signing up huge companies, huge restaurant chains. Even the Hong Kong airport, the entire airport, came to us and said, you know, we want to join the Green Monday movement, and we will mandate all the restaurants in the airport to add plant-based choices as a way to counter or slow down climate change and all the environmental issues. So it start to, like within 3 months, this thing start to snowball. It, the domino effect start to happen. We sign up 1,000 schools, elementary, middle school, high school, and then, of course, universities. And then, yeah, and then now, you know, to jump to kind of where we are is, before we exist, only about 5% people in the city of Hong Kong had any sort of plant-based eating habits, whether it's for health reason or for religious reason. There were only about 5%. Now, we are talking about 23% of a city of 7 million people. So 23% of 7 million
shift.
Is like,
yes,
1.6 million people are at least practicing one plant-based day per week. And as a matter of fact, of those 23%, half of those are doing either half of the time or even full time. So we basically had a food revolution happen within 2 to 3 years and turn the city upside down. And like now, like in the last 12 to 18 months, I think the number of vegetarian restaurants in Hong Kong, if not double, it went up at least like 80%, I think. And like every week or every other week, there's a new one opening. And within existing restaurants, there used to be, for example, no vegetarian choice. But now, like you will see, like, you know, 4, 5, 6, depending on the size of their menu, appearing on the menu. So, and we use this as the entry point. Now, we are not just here purely to talk about, you know, a meat versus plant-based discussion. We're talking about a shift to a sustainable lifestyle. So this is only the beginning point. And then once people are aware that change is doable, and once people are aware what the problems are, then, you know, they can start elevating. They can start to interpret Green Monday in more ways than just the diet. They start to take it further into other parts of their life as well.
It's like a gateway, and I'm just sitting here smiling, and I hope someday that all of my guests will be in studio because we can fly them here and we can see their faces. But it's certainly clear to me why Deb was so enthusiastic. And what was happening for me as you described this movement is that it is what this whole movement to a sustainable planet is about. It is about baby steps. And you gave corporate leaders and schools, you gave them a bite-sized chunk. You didn't come in and say, change your whole menu, stop serving meat, on and on. And I don't know if this is fair conclusion on my part or an accurate conclusion, but I can see the difference between Green Monday and Meatless Monday, because you're not even saying you have to be meatless. You're saying Green Monday would be a day to go plant-based, but you're saying to the corporations, yes, you can have, you can still have meat on the menu if that is what the choice is. So it's not, it's not an extreme and radical departure, but it's so intentional, and the impact has such a ripple effect.
We, it's funny because we insist, like when someone listened to our pitch, right. Or when someone first learned about us, they say, oh, you know what, this is so great, we want to join. So we will start to talk to our chef or our cafeteria, things like that. And some people, I mean, because they're so enthusiastic, they get too excited. They say, well, then we'll go 100% plant-based on Monday, or maybe we'll do this actually 5 days in our cafeteria. And to their surprise, I, as the founder of Green Monday, I would tell them, please don't remove the choice from people.
That is so smart.
You got to make people opt
in. Yeah.
Yes, you got to make, so when they make the choice, it is their choice. You guide them, but let them make the decision. So you don't have to force them to say, okay, like next Monday, you know, we will have a, you know, sharp cutoff, and, you know, from that Monday on, no meat or no whatever. And, you know, it, like psychology 101 tells us that if you force people to don't do something, if you ask them, don't do this, don't do that, they actually end up doing more, right? I mean, censorship oftentimes create the opposite effect.
Yes.
So that's, it's kind of, we sort of, in a way, break down or unlock the potential of baby steps. Is give people the tools, give them the guidelines, and but at the same, give them the platform, but at the same time, let them make their choice. If they cannot do it Monday, they can do it Tuesday. If they
if they
prefer, you know, if they still want, you know, to have a meat dinner, then that's okay. Then have green lunch. You know, there are many, many ways to interpret this, and Monday is more of a symbolic to a new start. Of course, you know, we give people a framework that, hey, you know, after the weekend when we usually overeat, then Monday
so
is
true.
A good day to detox,
oh
you know,
gosh.
Or to eat lighter. So
yes.
That's a guideline, but you don't have to follow it. I mean, you can pick whichever day you like. I mean, you can do Green Sunday if that is what you prefer. Or if someone say, now, okay, this is the fun part of it, or the I guess the brilliant part of it, is that, okay, if someone say, you know what, I am not ready to make that shift in terms of my diet, that's still okay. They can still interpret Green Monday in other ways. So for example, let's some restaurants or some buildings, okay, buildings, they don't serve food.
Right.
But they join Green Monday by saying, well, you know, we will dim our lights on Monday. We will reduce,
wow.
You know, we'll make sure that we'll encourage people to reuse things, so reduce the waste. But using Monday just as an excuse. But so they start to, you know, delve into other things. And when a school joins, for example, we're growing, by the way, this movement now, actually, we're growing internationally. And for example, schools, universities in the U.S. now, many have launched Green Monday. So one of them is Columbia University in New York City. And what Columbia does is they start to incorporate other green initiatives under this umbrella. So whether that means waste reduction, whether that means energy conservation, both in dormitories and in other buildings, and whether it means recycling, they start to incorporate those under this umbrella. And that is great. I mean,
it's huge. I mean, it's huge. Just not just because of the size, but the stature of Columbia University, and, you know, and the beat goes on with students. It's part of their climate action plan, and I love it. So you're not going to believe this, and I don't either, but we are up on our first break, and there
okay.
are many, many more important things to talk about as well. Everybody, if you just joined us, joining us for this show is David Young. He is the thought leader, movement maker, and you can see why, and the co-founder of Green Monday. And David, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Columbia, because I didn't want to cut you off, about what that means and how that has a ripple effect on thousands of lives in New York City. And then talk about Green Common. I'd love to talk about, you're not just really saying, okay, do Green Monday as part of your platform. you have a corporate solutions division or component to what you're doing. I really want to talk about the restaurant program because eating out is such a big deal. So we've got lots more to talk about. Everybody, please stay here with me and join this great conversation with David Young, from co-founder of Green Monday. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks so much for being with us. The name of our show today is How Green Is Your Monday? Joining me for this hour is David Young. He is the co-founder of Green Monday, and a little bit more about them. As a social startup group, Green Monday not aims to, but is tackling climate change and global food insecurity by making low carbon and sustainable living simple, viral, and actionable. They have received numerous awards. I just want to say a lot throughout the show. Visit greenmonday.org and have your life transformed. It's really such a great website and content rich. So let's get on with the show. Talk a little bit more about Columbia University. And I guess my question would be, like, did they hear about you? Did you reach out to them? How did that viral growth happen? Because, you know, they're one of the most prestigious universities in our country and in the world.
Well, after we start targeting and talking to schools, well, we talk to all different types of entities,
right,
in the society, but school definitely is one area that we focus on because, after all, we are talking about some type of education here. We are promoting a new way of thinking about,
right,
our lifestyle and our food. So naturally, the earlier people know about it, you know, they can adopt that change and they can influence their families too. So so in Hong Kong, when we start, school has always been one of the area that we put the most resources on. Now, after we have all the major universities in Hong Kong, Chinese University, Hong Kong University, University of Science and Technology, these are the top schools in Hong Kong. So after they all sign on board, it was natural that, you know, at some point we start to talk to universities around the world. So
right,
that, you know, includes China, Japan, Singapore, UK, and of course the States. Now, I myself happens to be, I am an alum of Columbia University. I spent over 10 years living in New York.
So you love the kudos I'm giving Columbia, and I'm a Jersey girl, so it was right across the river.
Oh. Yeah, and my parents actually spent many years living in New Jersey too. So I think it was one occasion when I was at some reunion. So I spoke with the deans of the school and I told them what I'm doing, which is, you know, this global movement about promoting sustainability and just positive changes. And they say, wow, you know, this is, you know, really make impact. So what can we do to help? And I say, the first thing I came up was, well, what you can help is, can we talk to the, you know, different departments within Columbia and potentially launch this in the U.S. And, you know, before you know it, we talked to director of student affairs, director of dining service, the head of student groups, and everyone. I mean, they were very excited, and they look at all the materials that we give, the infographics, the way we present it. They think this is a great platform to launch this. And in fact, it happened that their sustainability office were also about kind of repositioning some of the initiatives.
Right.
So we came in at a good time,
yes,
as a good vehicle for them to bundle things together. So we launched last year, so it was September of 2014 was when we launched at Columbia. And then, but I was also talking to many other schools simultaneously. So UCLA.
Right, I saw that. The Bruins.
Yes, and they have cafeterias on campus now that on Monday for dinner, they would serve entirely plant-based food. And the response has been very positive. That's, you know, obviously the caterers and, you know, the dining service, they really focus on providing good, tasty, nutritious dishes to the students. So it changes people's perception that they used to think, oh, when you eat plant-based, you have not enough protein, or you have no choice but except you eat salad, and salad again. So
right. And not true. Absolutely right.
Which
not true.
Of course, it's not true. So Washington University in St. Louis is one of the early adopters, and they really love, you know, how, again, you know, baby steps that anyone can take can make huge changes in the school and, of course, general society. So, in fact, right now, and these, you know, the following data or information literally are happening like in the last 2 or 3 weeks is we have schools from Germany, from England, from Mexico, from Finland, from Japan that are either launching, have already launched or about to launch Green Monday at their schools because of, you know, I've spoken at various conferences, sustainability conferences,
right,
of universities, both nationally or internationally, and they just found that, you know, this is a platform that, why would you not join? You know, this is very simple, it's too obvious, and by creating this global school network, it is a great way for schools and universities to exchange best practice. So now the number of schools that are joining Green Monday are expanding exponentially as we speak.
It's going viral. It's an explosion. And I think about it when you're talking, it's so much more. I just want to be careful with my words because I know how many people listen to this, but it's like, it sounds so much more exciting and doable and manageable than a climate action plan. But it really is. If you stop eating meat one day a week, you are part of a climate action plan that can impact the planet almost as much as anything you can do. And I agree with you about the consciousness of, like in our country, I'm most familiar with how our chickens and our cows and our turkeys are being treated. It's like, and our pigs. I mean, it's like there's a whole integration of thought that happens, and eating meat is a part of that. And you know, to the selfish part, I just want to comment, if you're just being totally selfish, which is okay, eating less meat is really better for your health. It's like a gateway to a healthier lifestyle, healthier air, and healthier, you know, less transportation, because a lot of it can be locally sourced. So I'm a believer, and it's I just want to tell you what's going on at the President's Advisory Council on Environmental Sustainability at the University of Arizona. I'm a member, and I'm going to bring this to the board talk to them about what you're doing, because they have a robust student for sustainability group, and it's like, why would this not be on every university campus? But this show is not about me. It's about you and your message. So stop it, Mrs. Green. I want you to talk about Green Common, because it's huge, giving people a choice. So it's like, okay, these social entrepreneurs and sustainability thought leaders would not stop with creating a worldwide movement called Green Monday. Let's give people an unbelievable prototype for shopping. Sacred green shopping.
Well, that's what makes us a social venture, right?
Yes.
It's the venture part, the business part. Now, the questions that we often encounter, and even myself or many, many fellow vegetarians or plant-based eaters, is, yes, we understand the benefits, personally, health-wise, environmental, you name it. Okay,
right.
Now we get it.
Right.
So the next thing, of course, is, okay, then how to practice it?
Where, you know,
how
do we
to
get
implement
it? Yes.
Where do we get it? So, and when I made the shift, when I made the move from New York back to Hong Kong, I was already a vegetarian. But to the huge inconvenience of my life is, I realized, first of all, eating out is a big problem because just lack of choice, people's perception. But then finally getting grocery is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time when you turn around a certain food label and then you realize, oh, there is some chicken stock in it and there is some beef, some ingredients in it. And it was a big hassle. And my wife, who actually, well, she's the one who is responsible for most of the home and household shopping, is she needs to go to different spots in town just to, okay, for this, I will have to come here. And then for that, I need to go there.
Right.
So for the longest time, I identified the four major barriers for people to adopt, even if they know the benefits. The four barriers are, number one, lack of accessibility. Okay, so just inconvenience.
Right.
And then two is lack of selection, because it's always that one item or two items. You know, that's it. So even if you like it, you cannot eat that seven days a week.
I don't want to eat sweet potatoes again for dinner.
Exactly. You know, you just had that last night.
Yes.
So lack of selection, lack of accessibility, lack of understanding on how to eat nutritiously or healthily. And then finally is how to simply cook a tasty meal. Because at the end of the day, if the meal tastes good, it doesn't really matter if it's meat or non-meat, right? People will love it anyway.
So true.
At the same time, no matter how good the course is, but if that means people have to eat, you know, boring and, you know, and just bland food all the time, then quite frankly, even I would quit. So,
it's so true. It was
something that I know I need to break these four barriers, make it simple for people to adopt. Because the other way is, if we have all these choices, then actually sometimes you can do the education later. No one says that you need to teach people first before they change. They could also change and then learn about the benefits later. So that's where Green Common comes in. And Green Common is, we have two locations right now. In particular, there's one location right in the heart of downtown Hong Kong. And we just opened the world's first plant-based food emporium, or plant-based food megastore.
I love
it. In downtown Hong Kong. It's a 6,000 square foot space, and it has multiple components to it. So first, there is a supermarket that you can do all your grocery, and we source products from the U.S., we source products from U.K., from Taiwan, from Japan, and of course, local as well. But Hong Kong happens to be a city that doesn't have a lot of agriculture, so unfortunately, the local element is a little bit difficult. But of course, in any other cities, I mean, local is very important to reduce carbon.
Right.
So number one is the market component. The second component is, of course, besides, you know, shopping for home, is if you eat out, we give you a great choice of vegetarian bistro or cuisine. So there is a restaurant component. And then the third one, which is very interesting, is we have a part which is called Kind Kitchen. And Kind Kitchen is a cooking studio that we will hold classes. There are two stations there that we can have teachers and chef to hold classes. So 30, 40 people can come in either to see a demo or they can participate in the cooking, in the learning of the cooking.
How?
So we have raw chef,
yes.
We have vegan chef, we have Western, Chinese, Asian style chef, of course, all plant-based, that come in, and we have classes virtually every day. So either like Monday to Friday, it would usually be after work. Like, so for example, I say 6 o'clock or 6:30, depending on which day. And then on weekends, we have it in the afternoon. So people can come in, sign up for a class. They can do it for one day. They can do it for a whole week. It's up to them, and learn how to cook.
And, you know,
there's the last element.
To
finish and we have. And we have a forest, so if we're talking about green living, then of course, you know, people should add plants to their home, add flowers to their home, so we have a beautiful forest. So combined, this is a plant-based green living emporium.
I cannot believe it. And I was laughing when you were talking about the eating part of it, because my husband and I have been on that journey where we're trying and we're trying different recipes, and you eat it and look at each other and say, what do you think? And many cases on this journey, it's like, it was awful. And try as we may, so it's like, it is a continuing journey, because I grew up in the meat and potatoes generation. And my mother was a great cook. She had a lot of fresh fruits, vegetables, and salads. But she, the very core of our meals was based around meat and potatoes and usually gravy. So that's what my taste buds are used to. So a kale salad doesn't ring all the bells. You know what I mean? So it's for this generation. My children are much healthier eaters, and they are that young group of people that are, you know, the millennials and younger, that are saying, I want real food. I want to ask you about the impact of, and what is the name of the food emporium? Is it something like
that? Well, the overall, the whole space is called Green Common.
Okay.
And then within Green Common, we have, you know, the cafe has a name, the flower shop has a name, but overall, this is the Green Common food emporium.
And for the flower shop, I mean, that's a likely segue, because I'm sure you're looking at, you know, fair trade and flowers that are not laden with pesticides, insecticides, and herbicides that off-gas and can actually make you sick. So what a wonderful, beautiful, fun component to add to that.
And flowers, of course, is so pleasing, visually pleasing too, right?
So
the flower shop is at the entrance of the shop, so you cannot miss it when you walk in. And it just, everyone, like 99 out of 100, if not 100 out of 100 people who come into the space, I mean, and by the way, we don't call it like a vegetarian or vegan supermarket.
Right.
We simply say this is a green emporium, a food emporium. And doesn't matter if that person is a meat eater, doesn't matter if that person has any awareness. They may not have ever heard of Green Monday. That's okay too. But they come in and they just have a great experience. They can still shop for snacks. They can, and we have very clear product labeling and everything. So, you know, for someone who is gluten-free, I mean, we have with the price tag. Next to the price tag, we show, like, for example, whether the product is organic, whether it is gluten-free, whether it's dairy-free, whether it is fair trade, whether it's local, etc. There are 8 categories of things that we break down, so that, like, let's say you're a gluten-free eater, then you can just look at, because how you know how each product, they put their food information differently. So usually what we do is, you know, we pick up an item and then we go look around, like 360, right?
You know,
left to right, top to bottom.
Where is it? What am I eating?
You know, so is this gluten-free or not, you know? And you know, some companies do a better job in you know, making it visible, but some put it in some really hidden places. So, but with our labeling system is, they can just, they can look right to it and say, oh, I can see the GF sign, so of course I can buy that.
Right.
And if that next product doesn't show GF, then he or she doesn't even have to bother to search, because we have done that due diligence. We have done that work for them. So
it makes it so, like, easy, instead of making this going to the grocery store an hour and a half trek because you have to keep reading more labels. I mean, we've got to the point where we know what it is, but, and you can trust it. But I mean, it just really makes it easier to grow this movement so that people don't find all those barriers.
So exactly. We really, I mean, and that's what entrepreneurs do in general, right? Is we got to solve problems and make it easy. Whatever type of product or whatever type of experience we deliver is make it easy for people to change. So, and in our case, that's what we do. And we, you know, our slogan is make change happen, make green common. Green commonplace. You know, so everyone can do it. And, you know, there will be no, like, they don't need to feel intimidated. They don't need to feel lack of choice, because the store has so many goodies that, you know, I don't see anyone come out like empty-handed and say, oh, you know what, I cannot find one thing that I want. That's just impossible.
And you said the magic word, snacks. We were talking about that at the Bioneers Conference. I mean, there were 4,000 people there that are highly elevated thinkers, in my opinion, and committed to climate action plans. And it's like, what about a healthy snack? I want something that tastes good and that I know is good for my body, and then I'm not going to say, oh my gosh, this is dry, this is tasteless. I know it's healthy, but I'm just going to try and shove it down. So we are going to another break, and there is so much more that I want to ask you about. So we'll have to, like, really, I love your answers. I love your passion and enthusiasm. But when we come back, I really would like you to go into, from your global view, what you're doing to help restaurants. Because to me, my biggest challenge, and many of my colleagues and peers, what are we going to do when we eat out? It's harder. So everybody, please stay here with me to learn and grow and think with us. David Young, he is co-founder of Green Monday and so much more. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And thank you, David Young, for appearing on our show today to discuss the very important mission of Green Monday, the movement, why it impacts all of our lives. And I mean, I would not call you a social startup group. I would call you an idea whose time has come and is catching on, like, I hate to use the analogy, wildfire, given what's going on in California, but it is really just picking up steam and is such an important mission to be having the kind of success that you're having. It's life-saving, and I mean that. And, you know, we didn't really talk about, sometimes I use terms on the show that I'm so familiar with, but I want to address this because I looked at my notes. Global food insecurity. So that's a term that not everybody, you know, we get new listeners every day. Just talk for a minute about how what you're doing does address global food insecurity and just what that is. It's a major challenge to our world today.
It is the other kind of the other side of the coin.
Right.
When we look at global warming, our visual is, for example, you know, polar bear in North Pole who are losing their home. Right.
That's, I love that on your TED Talk, by the way. What do you see when you see this, David and Goliath? Well, I was like, oh my God, it was the poor polar bear. So sorry, but go ahead. The polar bear.
That's the visual that we get.
So
but
great.
The truth is, other than sea level rise, which of course is going to happen with climate change, but the other thing is our land and our resources are becoming more and more scarce. Yeah. And given all these extreme climate that are fluctuating, it means that there is less and less land to grow food. And also because we are consuming so much meat, and most people don't realize that, you know, meat or the livestock industry consume a disproportionately high amount of land and water to create the food that we ultimately come to our plates. So, you know, with climate issue, with our, you know, extravagant way of eating, basically, we are stripping, we are handicapping the world and making healthy land and, you know, good resources to raise food to become more and more scarce.
Yes.
So right
to
now
feed
in
a growing
world,
population, a glowing
and then to make the matter way worse is that we are at 7 billion people globally right now, and of those 7 billion people, we have around 1 billion who are suffering from hunger on an ongoing basis, so 1 out of 7. But our global population is expected to rise to 9 billion in about 30 to 40 years.
And you sit there and you think about that, and that's going to happen quickly.
Like 30 years.
Yes.
Now, and by the way, 30 years ago, our global population was only at 4 billion. So this home that we all live in, it used to only support around 4 billion 30 to 40 years ago. But in 30 to 40 years later, it needs to support 9. So even like simple math, right, is, okay, it was supporting 4 people, now it needs to support 9 people. And by the way, these 9 people are living in a way that is much more demanding that in terms of resources.
Yes, high consumers.
40 years.
Yes.
Yes, like, so, like, before, like, 40 years ago, we don't eat steak every night. You know, not everyone is consuming a chicken and meat every day. It doesn't work like that. It did not work like that. But now, that's becoming the norm, that if you don't eat meat, that becomes, like, a big deal. So that is the global food insecurity issue, is that actually, this year, 2015, I think every 5 years there is a world global expo, which like hundreds of countries would convene and have this 6-month pavilions to address what the major issues that we need to talk about. And usually they are related to technology and innovation. But this year, the World Expo, which is held in Milan, Italy, the theme is called Feeding the Planet. It's called Feeding the Planet, and which is, you know, we need to come up with ways to, you know, how do we, what kind of changes does it take or do we have to do, and what type of innovation do we need to feed? First is the 7 billion people today, and then very soon, 9 billion.
Yes.
And one more thing is, UN gave a very scary number, which is, and we all know about the California drought, but UN says by 2030, which is only 15 years from now, 40% of global population will not have access to clean water.
It's getting worse. I mean, it's getting worse. The water shortage, water scarcity, it's getting worse.
Yes.
And you know, the thing
two
that,
out of five.
The thing that strikes me as you talk and why what you're doing is so very important and can really slow down the acceleration, the trajectory we're on, is that people are already dying. You know, we have 2,300 counties that are experiencing extreme drought. People are not dying yet in the United States, and we tend to get a little myopic, but yep. I am in an international, part of an international movement, and people are dying from lack of clean water, lack of access to any water, and crops are, you know, burning up. So it's not going to happen. If people are looking, you know, the trajectory is moving quickly. And this Green Monday, when I got so excited about it, David, and I mean that sincerely. I've been doing this for 8 years, and I'm like, such an integration of thought. And I want to, that's my big thing, is it's not a silo effect, what you're talking about and what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's a ripple effect. You have committed to socially responsible businesses and helping people do that, and to children, getting them in on the game, and healthier eating, which uses less water and uses less transportation sometimes, and doesn't helps with the carbon emissions. So I sound like a cheerleader, and I better stop that. It's like, Gina, stop that right now. But it's like, I just want you to know that you have another true believer. I'm going to call Deb Nelson and say, I'm exhausted. I just can't even keep up with all he's doing. It's like, and I think I've got a lot of energy. So I want to ask a two-part question, and sometimes I get myself in trouble with them. I want you to please explain us what you're doing to help restaurants, and then talk about your thoughts, because you do have deep thoughts. You are a visionary about fast food restaurants. To me, that's one of the undoings. I'm very interested in children's health. We have childhood obesity at epidemic rates here. We have autism. I mean, this community in particular with juvenile diabetes. And I tie it all, I say, well, it's all because of fast food, which is really an oversimplification, but in some ways also true. So what are you doing to help restaurants? And then what is your thought for how can we shift the millions and millions of pounds of really unhealthy food that is consumed every day in fast food restaurants?
Yes. So, okay. So let me take on this two-part question.
Yes. It's a big one.
The first one, of course, is how do we help them?
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, first of all, is by joining this movement, by adding, Green Menu or Green Monday Menu, we we celebrate that. We tell, you know, media, we tell, you know, our fans, we spread it along social media that, hey, you know, this new chain just joined, and they are offering all this new, you know, healthy, wholesome, and tasty dishes that are plant-based. So one way we help them is definitely through in terms of spreading the words. It's not just one restaurant just, you know, doing a little chain, tweaking the menu.
Right. Right.
It's not that. There is a much deeper layer to it in terms of meaning. So we always, you know, any restaurant that join and they contact us and they say, you know, we are thinking about adding these choices, these dishes. We say, great, you know, we'll come try them. And, you know, we can offer you with more feedback on how to make them better. So
right.
That's number one. Now, two is some restaurants do come to us and say, you know, I want to do it, but our chef truly don't know how.
Right.
I mean, they really
right.
have no idea.
Then meat
we
and
would
potatoes.
Invite them. Yes, so we would invite them to Green Common,
okay,
and say, okay, we have both chef, a culinary consultant, and also nutritionists who can guide the chef. Okay, because by guiding them, we eventually guide the crowd, the general public. So we let them try different ingredients and say, hey, you know, besides selling them to end users or to, you know, end customers, of course we can also sell those ingredients to restaurants as well. So that would be kind of the wholesale side of the business. And they would come in and they can pick, you know, if this is a Thai restaurant, if this is an Italian restaurant, if this is whatever type of cuisine they are, you know, we would suggest, you know, what type of ingredients they can add to their menu. So I guess the quick answer is, on one hand, we give them media exposure and
yes.
you know, spread them on media. And then on the other hand is, again, address that problem of how to make tasty dishes and how to create variety with the menu. So that's how Green Monday and Green Common, they are like sisters.
Yes.
I mean, they,
yes.
you know, again, you know, whichever side, if you
piece.
Need... Yeah, the education piece and then the solution piece. So, you know, if you can deal with it yourself, great. Then we'll help you spread. But if you need ideas and solutions, then, you know, the Green Common side will come into play. So that's how we help restaurants. Now, to the second question about fast food and just the general issues, particularly health issues that our society has with regard to how we're eating nowadays, and people are eating like mindlessly, I would say that's
yes,
the word.
If
eat healthy is mindful eating, then that this would be mindless eating. And I guess the way is our approach, and this is very integral. This is like the DNA of Green Monday. We do not bash. We do not shame. We do not point fingers. We don't do that side. Rather, we always say, look, like we would look, go to a restaurant and say, look, like no matter how unhealthy or some people may use the word evil, okay, but no matter how, but if they are serving tens of thousands of people per day, ultimately, we cannot just replace them overnight.
Right.
I mean, they exist, they have their customer base, and for multiple reasons, consumers are buying food from them. So our approach is always, okay, how can we, no matter where they come from, no matter how good
right.
or not good they're from, is, okay, look at what the other restaurants are doing. You know, they are, you know, their sales are going up because they are changing the menu. They are adding more healthy choices. And I'm here to help you do more sales. I'm here for you to keep, to first of all, is to retain your customers, but also
right.
to attract new customers. So we always use that positive approach. We don't want to, we are never in a conflicting or head-butting situation with a restaurant, no matter where they are. We always come in and say, okay, baby step two. We go back to the fundamental baby
right.
step.
Right.
If you just try this two or three dishes or even one extra one, you know, see, let the consumers try. We will spread the words, you know. And now I must admit, not every time we can succeed. However, by doing that, we are kind of awakening the consciousness of the restaurant owners too. So they know, well, whether they do it from a pure business agenda standpoint, or yes, also from the health of the consumer standpoint, that, well, maybe at some point we need to change, because if we don't, sooner or later, and chances are it will be sooner, that those customers will leave them anyway. So That's kind of the way we position. Now, on the other hand, with some of the health food restaurants, their problem actually is not the quality of the food,
right,
but it's the cost. Like
yes.
sometimes,
yes.
and a lot of times, people complain and say, oh, you know what, eating healthy is so expensive. And that is another thing that we, and this is a giant task, but we honestly, we're trying to take on this task, is we need to help create economy of scale for healthy food too. Because one of the fundamental reason behind the scene that makes, well, unhealthy food so affordable is because they achieve economy of scale, global economy of scale, that you know, you can eat a very full meal even though it's very unhealthy, but at a very low cost. And that, again, cost at the end of the day is also another very important consideration factor.
It's so significant. The socioeconomic, you know, position for a lot of people eating fast food, it's a choice to feed their family. It really isn't, yeah. oh, I'm going to go get a, you know, a big hamburger and fries. It's like, I have $6 and I can get a family meal for $1.99.
So if there is an even bigger agenda
yes.
that we are trying to achieve, or at least trying to promote, and that is we like to make happen, is less try to change this disparity when it comes to, you know, just the economics behind
yes,
it.
The great
because
divide.
Because at the end of the day, you know, the cost part, you know, the money part, that of course, you know, that determines what people can consume, and that also determines the profits of the business. And we need to change that underlying economics of that. And that will not happen overnight. But if that shift start to happen, you know, rather than paying, you know, $15, $20, you know, for a healthy meal versus maybe $6 or $7 for, you know, unhealthy but still very full meal, we need to narrow that gap.
I can just say with like restaurants that we choose that are a little bit more expensive but healthier, if you look at your budgets in the position we're in, you can make a choice at almost any level of that paradigm of, I'm not going to have a latte, but I'm going to pay $4 extra for this very healthy meal.
Yes.
Because it matters to me and my body and the planet. I mean, it is those small steps that you talk about. It's, to me, the whole message of Green Monday is so doable because it's small steps collectively, big, huge impact. And the steps are so doable.
Exactly.
So doable. I don't know if you... Go ahead.
That's why, I mean, we always focus on, you know, the three pillars of Green Monday is simple, viral, and actionable.
I loved that. I read that too, and I underlined it. Simple, viral, and actionable. You can do it. So intentional.
Everyone can do it.
Everyone
in the world can do it. I mean, the moment they hear this, and we deliberately pick two words, Green and Monday, that these are two of the first vocabularies that we learn. Like even a 2-year-old would know what green is and what Monday is.
What Monday is. So translatable. And I will tell you this. We have about 2 minutes left. I want I know it's some people say an hour show and then they get on the show and I'm like, okay, can we do part two in about 5 minutes? Because there are lots of other things I sincerely wanted to talk to you about. And I think the takeaway for me, you know, we did the same thing when we started the Mrs. Green's World platform 8 years ago in media. And it was, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And that is means no shame, blame, guilt. You're doing this wrong. It's like, just start thinking and think along with us. And maybe we have some great ideas. So everybody, my request is that your one small step today is to go to greenmonday.org and become a part of this movement and read about it and figure out what your individual step is going to be. And David, you get the last word. What's your step that you would encourage people to do?
Well,
we have about 30 seconds.
Take the step, you know.
Take the step.
I always like to say, you know, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yes.
That's always the
Our
quote
friend
that,
Gandhi.
From Gandhi, of course.
Yes.
You know, be the change. You know, sometimes we talk too much. We comment on other people's action or inaction. No, focus on us. Focus on me and say, what can I do? So be the change you want to see in the world.
And it's just such a good one. There's a reason why that quote stays around forever with one of our true thought leaders of our time, Okay, this week, Down to Earth show about recycling electronics from Goodwill Industries. And on 21st, Dr. Sylvia Earle. She is a legendary ocean researcher and is referred to as her deepness. Please join us. David, I'll be watching, and you'll be back on Mrs. Green's World, I hope.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, make it a great green day, everybody.